And on the line now, from Crook near Bishop Auckland in County Durham, we've got Chris Clark. Hello, Chris.
Good morning, Ron.
Morning. Now, Chris, you're a retired police officer, right, retired intelligence officer, and you're now writing books, and you're called Armchair Detective. So, first of all, just tell me about the books that you've written and had published.
So far, I've had two actually published myself. It's Yorkshire Ripper, The Secret Murders, which was released in June 2015. And then in August 2017, co-author with Robert Giles, my friend from Northern Ireland, we had the Robert Black book, The Face of Evil, published. I've got another seven I'm writing at the moment, and I also helped to write Stephen Downing's book, The Case of Stephen Downing, which has recently been published, and another Yorkshire Ripper book with another friend of mine. But in the meantime, I got invited to the new Murder by the Sea series, which started last Tuesday. And I'm in five of the 10 box set. And today I'm going to speak about the first one that I've appeared in so far.
Yes, that's right. And that's about Lee Baker. So just tell us about that then, Chris, and take your time because we've got about 15 minutes.
Okay. Yeah, Lee Baker, he was a 19-year-old, good-looking teenager with above-average intelligence. He had artistic leanings. He was taken into care as a baby and grew up in care. But during his early years, he was exposed to watching horror videos and reading sort of horror magazines, which really desensitized him and distorted his thinking. And one of his favorite drawings was drawing a woman with her head cut off, which clearly came out in his offending. It's something that should have been picked up by the social services whilst he was in care. But what happened, at the age of 16, he developed a relationship with a young girl, and they spent 3 years together, and it became a bully, and he actually broke her nose, which finished the relationship. This was April 1986, and for the next couple of months he smouldered, and eventually on a particular day on the 2nd of June in 1987, he went round to his former girlfriend's mother's address, went in for a cup of tea, and they were chatting quite amicably. And then all of a sudden, Lee produced machetes and knives, attacked the woman, and then dragged her upstairs into the bedroom where he hacked her head off. Not sort of satisfied with that, he then took the woman's head into his former girlfriend's bedroom, placed the head on the pillow, and then pulled the bedclothes up to make it look like she was asleep in bed. This clearly was for the effect of when the girlfriend came home. You can imagine it was something of real sort of a horror fiction, although this was real life. He then left the address, decided to set fire to it, and before he left, he shot the family dog with a crossbow, a bolt, and he then went round to his former girlfriend's female friend and stabbed her repeatedly in her home address. And luckily, none of her vital organs were punctured, so he managed to survive. He then left and went on a rampage around Bournemouth, armed with his crossbow, and he came across a man who was a stranger to him, and just fired a crossbow bolt at him, and the man managed to stagger, and in the meantime Lee Baker stabbed him a number of times, and the man went to a nearby address to try and summon help, and when the ambulance got to him, his blood handprints were found on the door where he'd gone to try and summon help. Baker then carried on going round Bournemouth indiscriminately, trying to injure and kill other people. And he'd also devised a plan that he was going to blow up a local petrol station. He got himself some milk bottles, filled them with petrol, and then put some rags from a shirt in the top to make sort of a homemade Molotov cocktail. And the idea of what he was going to do, he was going to go to the petrol station, kill the attendant, then tie the pumps so the petrol spewed out of them, and pour downhill, and then he was going to ignite it with a Molotov cocktail. But for some reason, something clicked and didn't actually carry that through.
Chris, what sort of background did he come from? Because, I mean, he was 19 when all this was happening, but surely he must have had a disturbed earlier background.
Yes, that's what I'm saying. He was taken into care, so really his birth parents are not known. But he clearly grew up from an early age with this sort of obsession on death, and particularly with drawing people with their heads cut off. This should have been picked up at an early age, to say, by the district nurse, by social workers, all the people who should be in the package of when someone's taken into care.
What I meant by background, the rest of the family, were they all right? Have you been able to check that?
That's what I'm saying. It's unknown where he came from. He was adopted. He'd taken into care and then adopted. So there's nothing to indicate, apart from his own mental health, to portray any indicators. And the indicators were there, clearly, as he was growing up, and no one picked up on it. And he was basically left to his own devices. Today, it's quite clear he must have been mentally disturbed, either from birth or at a very early age, to have that sort of macabre interest.
Well, yes, I think that's pretty obvious, isn't it? And is he still alive these days?
No, as far as my records, I didn't actually get involved in that, but I think he died about 4 or 5 years ago.
Right, and was he in custody in an establishment when he died?
I mean, he was actually taken into normal prison, which I find sort of strange as well, because clearly, you know, he was criminally insane as opposed to, the normal type of murder.
Chris, amongst the people that you've investigated, do you find that there's people who would do that, there's a regular trend in all of them? Do they all have disturbed backgrounds?
In the main, yes. In Peter Sutcliffe's case, he actually grew up in a proper family environment. On one hand, he had his mother was a strict Catholic, and his father was basically a sportsman and a Yorkshireman of the day who was sort of quite popular. He just wanted Peter to grow up as a robust, normal schoolboy, but it's quite clear that Peter himself was defective right from birth and clung to his mother's side, which didn't sort of help his development. And then he got a job in a graveyard, in a cemetery, digging graves, and he took great delight in sort of dead bodies at that age. So again, it clearly was within him rather than the family background. I mean, in Lee Baker's case, these drawings, there's a graphic example in the James Bulger murder in 1993. John Venables, several weeks before the murder, had drawn some stickmen-style pictures, very grotesque ones, where it showed someone stabbing other people. So again, I mean, he was clearly exposed. I think it's acknowledged that he was exposed to horror movies and literature. So it does distort a young mind, and that's why we have age restrictions, quite frankly, for 18, 15 and parent guidance.
Okay then, Chris, anything else you want to mention?
I'd just like to mention that the other four I'm involved in are still to take place. I don't know the order they're going to be in or when, but it's running every Tuesday on CBS Reality, which is on Freeview Channel 66 and Sky 146. And there's going to be John Hague, the acid bath murderer, Neville Heath, the former Royal Air Force pilot who murdered at least two women in London and severely mutilated their bodies, John Bodkin Adams, he was the original Doctor Death. He probably killed more patients than Harold Shipman for gain, for wills and money left to him. And the other case is Nicholas Rose, who murdered and disposed of Charlotte Pinckney's body, and her body's never been found. So they're running every Tuesday, and there are other cases in between, if anyone's interested. It's CBS Reality, Tuesday at 10 p.m.
And Chris, how do people buy your books?
They're both on Amazon, and I have a website which is www.armchairdetective.org.uk, and there's a link there to Amazon, but so they can go directly to Amazon to locate them.
And if anybody's got any information, it doesn't matter if you think it's irrelevant. It probably is relevant. And if people want to get in touch with that, how do they get in touch with you?
Again, the website, it's got a contact page. It's www.armchairdetective.org.uk. And I'm particularly interested in any unsolved murder, particularly, you know, from the cold case point of view. If anyone has any information they think that can help, and for some reason they've been reluctant to go forward to the police, that's my aim, is to progress any unsolved cases there are.
Okay then, Chris, well, thank you very much for coming on today. Is there anything else before you disappear?
Yes, two things. I'd just like to mention that the advances and royalties for my books go to supporters of stray and abandoned dogs at DNS Kennels at Langley Moor, Durham, for the welfare and upkeep of the stray dogs and cats in their care. And also to thank you and Ian for Chat and Spin Radio, for giving so many people the voice to promote, whether it's a book author, band, or any other good cause. And just to mention that you have a crowdfunding page.
We do indeed, yes. If anyone wants to make a donation to that, it doesn't have to be a big donation. It's just whatever people can afford. It's you can pay it in one of three ways. You can do it through PayPal, which is that, and that is the quickest and best way to do it. You can do it through the Facebook page, and that's facebook.com/chatandspin. And also you can do it through the station website, and there is a link there as well. And Chris, thank you for your donations in the past.
You're welcome, Ron.
Okay, thanks for coming on, and we'll speak to you again next Saturday at the same time.